talking about like her relationship with Jay and like, you know, and their
Yeah.
breakup. I was like, well, this is perfect because, you know, Jerome and I just had a kind of a breakup. Anyway, if this is being recorded and I include this in the podcast, this is just to say that life reflects art. Life imitates art. Art imitates life. Once again, we find ourselves reflecting on ways that the current episode of Everwood just lines up perfectly with our real life situations.
Yeah.
Real
Objects in
weird.
mirror are closer than they appear.
Including the fact that before recording this, well, before watching tonight's episode of Everwood, which is, well, no, I need to do the theme song.
Yeah, you do.
I'll do the theme song after this. But we were talking about, like, I forget how we got on the topic of VHS
It
tapes.
was me. It was me. I was talking about how I'm pretty sure that when I
It
was in
was
high
the
school, oh,
image on the
because,
bed.
yeah, that V, I thought you had a
It looked
VHS.
you thought I had VHS tapes on my bed.
Yeah.
But it
And
was
then
the DVD box set of Everwood season
you
two.
argued that there couldn't possibly be a VHS of Everwood, because I
I
was like,
didn't think
what?
I think it would
Really?
be
I don't
too
know. I
late.
think back then. And then the fucking show opened on a video store with VHS's in
We
it,
think.
resolving the problem. No, there were absolutely VHS's in the
We
background.
think.
They were for sale, which made sense because it was around that time that they started selling all those VHS. Nobody wanted their VHS. None of these video stores wanted the VHS copies anymore. They fucking sold all that shit. It was perfect. I loved it. It was real weird. And it happens a lot when we record this podcast.
Yeah, it's awesome. Cool.
Fucking pretzel brand is the, they make the best of every pretzel.
Okay.
It's insane.
Okay.
He doesn't like
All
pretzels.
right. Here we go. I'm gonna bring us in.
All right, I'm ready.
Oh wait, I haven't decided on a. Can you help me decide on a sponsor for tonight's episode, or do you want to be surprised?
Roses, balloons. Congratulations. Believe balloons. What was
Karaoke
it?
machines,
What was the fucking balloon that she liked?
pinball
This one says
machines.
congratulations. What was it? This one says, fuck. Damn.
Oh, we got some ideas.
HIV.
Yeah, that's the fourth thing I wrote. I wrote roses, balloons, pinball machines, HIV research. Well, I'll probably just put this in the episode rather than spring a sponsor in the middle.
Yeah.
They got their sponsor content.
Ugh.
All right, here we go. Doo, doo, doo. Nope.
Oh, fuck you. You did it on purpose.
You'd be surprised.
Who are you, Bo Burnham?
Oh, fuck. No, we can't talk about Bo Burnham. This is not a Bo Burnham podcast.
KT promised they would, and they didn't.
Well, I was going to say it right away, but I won't. Yes, it won't be for the podcast. But Adam, can I just ask whether you've seen it?
Yeah, I saw
Okay.
it.
All right. All right.
It's content. He had to.
I saw it like day one, like or like a day or two after it dropped. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll share with you I will read to you my letterboxed review of it. I wrote a review of it, just like a list of thoughts in no particular order about Inside by Bo Burnham. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Is it positive or negative?
I gave it a 2.5 out of 5 stars.
Adam, I hate you. Like, honestly, you are Adam. That fucking entire production was you, Adam. Like, he's literally exactly like you. I don't give a shit. You
It's
are
why Adam
Bo
hates
Burnham.
it.
So of course, so
No, I
who
don't
else would I
even
give
want
a
to hear
two
it.
like
Get the
a
fuck
2.5
out of
to
here.
other than myself?
You know what I
Like,
give
I have mixed
Everwood?
feelings about
A
myself, so I've had mixed feelings about
one.
Ah.
No! Oh, I'm so
All
mad.
right.
Ooh.
Do
Nice.
Welcome to Ever Would, Never Wouldn't, a podcast where I, Adam Lawver, make my friends
Eric and
Bo Burnham.
I was going to say that, but I didn't.
I would have said it too. If you
watch
said Bo
and
Burnham,
discuss
I would have
with
also
me.
Said it. Oh man, KT. Now,
watch and discuss with me now. Season 2 of the hit early 2000s WB teen slash family drama
Everwood.
Tonight's episodes.
It's so delayed.
6 second lag. Season 2, episode 9, Just Like in the Movies, written by Rena Mamoun, directed by Matt Shackman, original air date, November 17th, 2003, making next week's episode, by the way, November 24th, 2003.
Ooh. Oh man, there's so much romance and tension in the air. That is going to be fascinating. It's Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay. I just don't give a shit about Thanksgiving, so that did not impact me at all.
Yeah, you're a weirdo.
Fuck you, Eric.
Yeah, Eric fuck does not like you. It.
Official DVD booklet episode description. Love has Everwood in its bewitched and bewildered grasp. Andy sends Linda a room full of roses. Ephraim tries reverse psychology on Madison. That's one way of putting it. Mm-hmm. A stutterer sings his feelings, and Amy is attracted to the town's answer to James Dean.
A stutterer. That poor guy.
Yeah, that poor guy, yeah.
Just like in the movies. You guys had some predictions about this. I think, didn't one of your predictions have to do with, like, a car being filled with VHS tapes?
That sounds like KT.
And Delia getting lost in the car.
Oh my god.
That definitely sounds like KT.
No, what? Wait a second.
I think it was you, Eric.
I know, it was sure definitely it was me.
What?
Because it was something that we were one of the lines of Madison was talking about his car could be filled with friends and movies or something like that.
God.
And then it was
what?
A joke about that, and then the title of this was Everwood Goes to the Movies.
So Everwood Goes to the Movies.
It wasn't just a random out of the blue
right.
thing.
I'm
There's
like,
a reason
the
I.
All right. Well, let's talk about
Everwood.
Initial thoughts, feelings before we get into the essentially four storylines.
Four.
That I'm going to go in order of from the worst to the best.
Ooh, what's he going to call the worst and the best?
In fact, let's start off with that.
Okay.
Predict yeah. the order of the four storylines.
Okay.
Do you need reminded what
Wait,
they are?
Wait, how about we just tell us? I think we should have our own opinions of what the storyline should be.
Sure. Oh,
not,
right.
Not predict Adam's ultimate opinion.
Oh, no, I like that better, actually.
I can do both.
Opinion.
All right, okay. Fine. I'll do Adam's opinion, sure.
So what do we got? There's Ephraim and Madison. There's Amy and Meth Man. There's Treat and Linda. And then what is he calling the fourth one? Stutter.
Justin and Kirsten.
Stuttering
does
Justin.
Does that really count? Jeez Louise.
It does count. Absolutely it does. All right.
Yeah.
So worst to best in terms of Adam. So best is... is Linda and Dr. Brown. And then Justin and Kirsten. And then Amy and Meth Man. And then Madison and Ephraim. That's my prediction from best to worst for Adam.
I'm too opinionated. I don't even know what the fuck Adam's opinion
yeah,
is.
Yeah, no, Kate, just rank them yourself.
Remember, Adam loves Bo Burnham. And then factor that in.
I like Eric predicting mine, and Katie, you just share yours.
Okay. Honestly, you might be surprised, but I actually thought the most entertaining one for me and the most interesting for me was the Amy one, the Amy and James Dean. Yeah. I also did like Treat Williams and Dr. Abbott. I use interchangeable names.
Andy and Linda.
I fucking hate Ephraim and Madison because it's gross and weird. But also, like, again, like, the stuttering person and rando girl, like, it's not really, like, I'm not that invested in it, but, like, it was fine, and it was sad and, like, embarrassing, and so I liked it.
What
but
were you,
like,
more excited to see another scene of?
Oh, more excited to see another scene. Amy and James Dean, the most.
No, I mean of those last two.
So that's number one.
Yeah, the first
two. Number two is Andy and Linda.
Yeah, but you were torn on the three and four. Of those, of Justin and Kirsten.
I would rather see the stuttering person and the random girl than this fucking Ephraim and Madison shit. It is bothering me a lot. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, well,
it's just turning Eric on too much.
Eric predicted accurately, and I'm in agreement with UKT that we will start
So what did you predict? Explain again. What was yours?
I'm just sharing. I'm going to reveal my order one by one from worst to best.
From worst to best. Okay.
He predicted the worst one accurately. Ephraim and Madison. Let's start there.
Okay.
And we're in agreement about that. Okay. So we start off with some Irv narration about nobody remembers the first line of a movie. Is that true?
No, it is absolutely not true.
I think often they do with these narrations. Poor Irv has to say things that are just like, we're going to establish this rule that every American knows. And it's really not always that makes sense.
Let's test it out. What's a movie that you absolutely love? What's your favorite movie?
My Cousin Vinny.
Hot Fuzz.
What's the first line of My Cousin Vinny?
I'd have to think about it.
What's the first line of Hot Fuzz?
No idea.
Yeah.
But I also don't know what the last line is.
He's talking about being in the car. I wouldn't be able to exactly see. He's going on his whole monologue about all of his accomplishments.
Okay.
My Cousin Vinny. Oh my God. See, this is going to drive me crazy if I don't actually do it. And this is going to be really boring to wait for.
It starts with the two kids, right?
Yes.
The car?
It's a song.
And they're cruising and on the
you see
those
literally
dips.
That yep you keep seeing it it's like a okay. I know the song.
I think the beginning of movies like lines whatever I'm bad at like actual quotes, but I feel like the beginnings of movies are much more memorable than the ends generally. Personally,
well, do you remember the last line of My Cousin Vinny?
I don't even remember how it ends. Does he walk out of the
courtroom and you win every case, but you have to have someone help you. Like, it's that whole thing, and then they're driving away, and I don't fucking remember. You know what? When I was in my 20s, I would have been able to quote you almost anything, but my brain doesn't really
work anymore.
I guess
it also needs to be, like, it needs to be a movie that has some kind of iconic last line. I think that's
exactly
the point he's making.
Or you just, yeah, I guess.
Play it again, Sam, or whatever.
Well, that's what they show in at the end of that scene before credits. Is like, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. Interesting. Still more Irv narration. Mm-hmm. Like, okay.
I want to see more Irv in the show. I don't give a fuck. Come
Me
on.
Too.
Poor Irv.
He's not white enough.
I like Irv.
So we're in a VHS store, which we already talked about how that
it's
was
not
so
VHS.
Exciting for us.
There were VHS there.
Okay, we were in a video store. A video store.
Everwood Video.
With a sign that said hot used.
Yes. And I was
in
like,
a later
we
cut,
paused and I kept talking about it for a long time.
In a later cut, you could see the whole sign. It actually did say hot used videos, I think.
Really?
Yeah, or DVDs or
it
something.
It just said hot used.
There was a bottom part of that.
I like thinking that it just said hot used.
Well, and Eric was trying to justify it too, because I was like, wait a second, hot used? I remember those sales of used videos.
Hot used? What is this sign describing? Me?
I also wanted to meet the owner of Everwood Video. I thought it was going to be a character,
so
but
too.
I think that's because of Parks and Rec and Jason Schwartzman.
Mm. Well, they should have just made Justin the owner of the video store.
Yeah.
Like, why not?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yep. And that's why his girlfriend liked him, because his girlfriend loves movies.
Yeah, which I was like, I thought that was really going to come into play. Like, yeah, because she was saying she wished she lived in a movie. I'm like, oh, yeah, he's going to be doing this big, romantic, ridiculous gesture. No, yeah,
what he did wasn't that a reference to, like, the movie 9 to 5?
Oh, Dolly what's Parton? 9 to 5?
It's not quite the same. It's like
that's Dolly Parton. I never watched that one.
And Lily Tomlin. And
isn't that the one where, like, somebody...
I've never seen it.
The guy walks onto the production line, picks up the woman and walks out. And isn't it set to the song that he sang?
Oh, I don't know.
Walking into the warehouse?
Okay. Oh, so he was actually really trying to recreate a specific film. Yeah. Interesting.
That must be the last line, which I don't remember, because I remember the first lines of movies.
First of all, I don't think it's 9 to 5. I think I already have that wrong.
Good.
So, final movie where man... carries woman out of factory. Okay, Google has me covered.
Oh, that's so funny.
Oh, it's an officer and a gentleman.
Didn't he say that was her favorite movie?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So that's. Oh. I know. I've seen that scene. I've seen it spoofed, like, in The Simpsons. And,
yes.
I haven't seen
and
that.
Other things.
Wow, or The Simpsons, really, that is so old now. Like, my parents liked that. I remember being too young to enjoy that movie.
Is it like Cary Grant?
No. It was just in the 90s.
Oh. Well, that's some added context for understanding the point of that warehouse scene.
Yeah.
And everybody applauding, like, that happens in that movie. Like, everyone applauds when he comes in his military uniform, like, and picks her up and romantically walks her out.
I cannot believe I did not pick that up at all. I've never seen it. Wow.
I've never seen it either, but, like, you never saw the Simpsons episode that spoofed it?
I haven't seen The Simpsons either.
I've seen the scene. I think I've seen the scene, like, in maybe, like, a documentary or something. But yeah. So, anyway, let's just... I think it's my headcanon that Justin is the owner of the video store.
Okay.
Basically, we have Ephraim and Bright hanging out, which we've seen kind of hinted at and building up over the course of the season. Mm-hmm. Bright wants to rent a particular movie with nudity in it. And Ephraim's like, I don't want to watch softcore porn with you.
Yeah.
Ephraim instead wants to watch The Pianist.
Which was a very funny thing to say right after they just said that, I have to say. Like just two teenage boys saying that, I just thought one of them was, especially with the Chris Pratt character who I can never remember is Bright. Especially with freaking Bright there, like, I thought he was going to be like, pianist. You know what I mean? Like, I just thought.
He said, and he's like, oh, about piano. It's also about the Holocaust. And then Chris Pratt gave the weirdest line delivery saying, well, that's a selling point.
Oh, did he emphasis on
with the point. Emphasis on
weird.
Point? Yeah, like that's a selling point. As if like I get like selling as an adjective, but like you'd think it should be. Well, that's a selling point.
Yeah, everyone I've
it's
ever
a selling
heard.
Point.
Yeah, a selling point.
It's a selling point. I don't think Chris Pratt was familiar with
didn't.
The phrase.
What yeah. That phrase means. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He tries arguing that, you know, Ephraim doesn't want to live in some dippy romantic comedy. You want to live the life of an action star like The Rock. This describes Ephraim as having a Joaquin Phoenix vibe.
Yeah.
And basically, like, yes, I mean, the episode description described what he's doing is like reverse psychology on medicine, but really it's just like nagging.
Kind
like,
of.
Yes.
And like, essentially, what is that whole, it's like the game, is it red pill? I don't even know what that there's a whole world of like
so
men's rights
from that
yes.
people who like are into like manipulative
yes.
game shit yes. of manipulating women into sleeping with them. That's what it was. It's annoying.
Yeah, it was gross.
I'm so glad to not know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, I'm familiar with a little bit of it. Like the funny thing is I actually like I agree about that take and like that it seemed like, and yes, I mean, Bright is trash and Chris Pratt is trash, but as far as Ephraim, for a second, I was like, but like Ephraim does need to learn how to chill out like a little bit. Like that was my take. I was like,
I mean, it was also, I
mean, this
I think
is
it was
terrible
clear
advice,
that the writers
yeah.
were like, this is not going to go well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think it was very clear because since it was the setup scene, I think it was very clear. I wasn't going like, oh my God, I can't believe.
Right.
Like, I was like, well, this dumb guy is telling him bad advice. Like, obviously, this isn't going to go well. But also, again, like, Ephraim needs to just calm down a little bit sometimes.
Slow yeah, totally. Ephraim needs some chill. Yeah. There's a book called The Game: Penetrating the Secret Society of Pickup Artists.
Ugh. Ew.
The seduction community. Anyway. So yes, Ephraim does need to learn some things. Bright says, don't hate the player, hate the game. Yeah, Ephraim's like, that kind of makes sense. It's wrong and evil, but it kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That like nothing keeps a girl around more than the possibility that maybe you don't even want her there.
Gross.
Yeah, sure. We see Ephraim then applying that around Madison, being like, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we see that Madison is in a fight with her boyfriend, Jay, over the phone. Mm. Ephraim still wants to cheer her up, so he sends Delia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I love the line when he's like, I think Madison's upset. Delia's like, I know, I'm 10, not stupid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he watches from the sofa, just like
eagerly,
with his arms up on the back of the sofa,
yep.
Perched, as Delia goes and tries to be nice to Madison. Which results in Delia inviting Madison to her slumber party and Madison saying yes. Clearly, we are seeing a running theme with Madison not being able to draw boundaries between herself and people who are too young for her to be hanging out with.
Yeah. But it was also cute.
No, it was very cute.
It was very cute. Yes. I actually wrote that down because I was like, Madison plus Delia equals cute, but too old for Ephraim. That was my note.
It was
bugging me so fucking much that this lady's such a creep. And then I'm like, oh, we're supposed to like this. And it's a really cute idea that this nice babysitter would actually hang out with some little girls and just like watch a movie because she thinks she's so cool. It was very sweet, but she's a fucking predator.
So I'm very, you know, this is always a fun topic. So like what age would Madison have to be for it to be like less creepy? So like if she was 18. If she was 18, 18, that's fine.
I would be okay with that. Eric, but
gross. Okay, 19. God. 19 and him 16.
No. And I know that sounds stupid, but like it's literally, I mean, okay. First of all, it's the law. Like, and I obviously, I'm not like a law loving like cop person or something. I'm just, but like in this particular case, you need to be careful around that age.
Yes.
It's like, I get that there isn't like a physical boundary, but like kids in general, and even like people under 21 in general, isn't it like their prefrontal cortex isn't even fucking fully developed yet? Like, and well, I
she's
say
apparently
that with,
20.
Yes, I know, but but 20 and 16?
Was that confirmed in this episode?
She said 4 years younger than her.
4 okay. years younger. Yeah. And might I say, my husband is 4 years younger than me.
Not quite. Not quite.
You are. But seriously, at that age...
I've always said I'm your Ephraim, even before I watched this show.
Wow, you're right.
Well, that's weird.
I'm your Ephraim and you're my babysitter. That's what we've always said to each other.
And I don't know how the universe... It was like it flew to us through time and space, and we absorbed that. Mm-hmm.
And now you're seeing yourself reflected in the show, and you're disgusted.
And I don't like it. I'm disgusted.
That's amazing.
I don't know how to fucking, like, seriously, I know it's an impossible question.
What is there to say? Like, it's, you know, it's... We're,
obviously, you need to judge things on case-by-case basis, but that is bases. Case by Kevin Spacey's. Fuck! But, like, for real...
I've always said you're my Kevin Spacey.
The laws are there to protect children. He is in high school, you guys.
Hey, she said
it too. I hate this.
Well, in his defense, he is grieving.
No.
He's very horny.
He is grieving it. He is horny.
Yeah. Yes. But well, what?
We don't need to defend him. Is the thing? Is that, I'm sure that's what you're saying,
no,
right?
Yeah.
We need to defend. No, exactly. Like he's not under attack. She is.
In her defense.
By you.
What?
In her defense, then, I should say, in her defense, he, because he's grieving, seems much more mature than he actually is.
But that's what the show is trying to. What I'm saying is,
you don't have a problem with him. You have a problem with her.
Yes, the problem is obviously with her.
Yes, but that's what
also,
I was trying
to say. No. But also, he is a persistent little gross fuck. He's 16 years old. She's a fucking hired babysitter who is 20 goddamn years old. And he's like kissing her and doing all
fucking
the shit.
Get it, Ephraim.
No, she get is it. Hired. No, she has been hired by his fucking father.
To do what?
To do a job, okay?
What job?
Okay, a job. And he won't stop sexually fucking harassing her. See, it suddenly got serious. It's fucking true. Do you understand? He didn't stop sexually harassing her. Now, yes, she is the older person. She's a 20 dumb fuck, but it is not okay. Like, this is, it is gross to watch.
Sure.
The end. And I'm sure that if people love this show and they actually listen to this fucking podcast, if they listen to this podcast,
one of the
people
15
are going to hate
of you
me
out there.
Because they're going to be like, dude, it was 2003. I don't even give a fuck. And I'm going to be like, listen, it doesn't excuse it. It's gross to watch, especially
sorry,
now.
Sorry, Gregory Smith, listener of this podcast. It's gross.
It's gross. Treat Williams could have hired an 18-year-old, which would have been even more awkward because it would have been like, Dad, she's in my school. This is weird. And that would have worked, too.
She could have been a recent graduate, high school graduate.
That too, right. She could have been a young senior, graduated, is still 18. But no, she's fucking 20 years old and the growth.
That's why it's so
complicated. He's a 16-year-old boy. They thought by reversing the genders. Can you, seriously, there is no way that you can tell me that they would have been okay with the same storyline because the other one was like the girl got pregnant and he left.
Finish the thought. I know what you were going to say.
If Ephraim was a girl, like if it was reversed situation.
Wait, but that is exactly what they're doing with Amy and Tommy.
No, they said he's 1 year older than she is. That's what they specifically said on the show. You're welcome, Adam. I like everyone more than you!
He was a year ahead of them in high school.
They said a year older.
Yeah,
no,
Leanie
that's
said
what
it.
They said.
He was a year ahead, so he's going to be a year, maybe two at most.
They definitely did not at any point. Okay, you know what? Also, if he's older than 18, that's gross too, and it falls to the bottom of my list too. But I'm pretty sure I felt okay with it because he wasn't just some 25-year-old trying to seduce a teenage girl. It seemed like he maybe couldn't finish school or something because of his problems. I know we're jumping from subject to subject, but come on. Yeah, I am super bothered by this shit.
Storylines. Adam's checked out.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. I guess Tommy isn't like fucking 20. Anyway,
no, he's not.
Okay, but guys, in your guys' life experience, when you went from high school to college, there was a difference. Just like the same fucking kind of difference going from elementary school to middle school, from middle school to high school. People expect more of people at certain ages. Like, there's a community of, like, you're the older kids now or whatever. And then when you go to college, it's like, you're an adult. You're a young adult, you know? Like, you're in high school. You still live at home. You still, like, it is an entirely different thing when you're a person who is aiming to be a grown-up versus a kid living at home, doing stuff at school, like,
sure.
You know what I mean? Like, it's gross.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I certainly did not feel like an adult in college. I still don't feel like an adult. Like, I look back on my college years, and I'm like, I was a fucking child. Like, for sure. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what that means. I'm not trying to argue against your discomfort. Like, I get it. Like, I'm watching this storyline now, and I'm, like, rolling my eyes and feeling kind of grossed out by it.
Yeah.
But I also know that when I was watching it when I was 16 or 17 in high school, like, I was like, oh, hell yeah, Ephraim, like, get the older girl. Like, that's so cool. Like, you know, guys like you and me, we can't relate to other high schoolers because we're, like, above that. Mm-hmm. So who else is going to like us except for, like, maybe, you know, college students or something? You know, like, I don't know. So
right.
There's certainly some discomfort.
And
we'll get to
totally
that, right?
It's totally a matter of also, like, me being a grown up versus being a teenager watching it as well. Like that totally sure. matters. Even today, probably. Probably if I was a teenager right now, I'd be like, yo, those laws are stupid. Like I could be in love with whoever I want. You know what I mean? Like it's just being an older person and looking at it and going, ugh.
Let's get through the rest of this. So Ephraim goes to Bright. Bright offers to be Ephraim's wingman to the children's slumber party.
Yep.
He also gets the word inadvertently wrong.
Yes.
It's calling it vertically or invertically.
Yes.
It's funny to me. So you say to the children's slumber party. So I was expecting him to be like hanging out with Ephraim in like Ephraim's room.
Yes.
And like keeping him from right. like going out and getting snacks right. or whatever. And then we get
he's singing
to karaoke. The party. And yeah, he is there at the party singing. I loved that.
I really love that. Which is fun.
That's really fun. Nice. They set that up kind of. They set up when Bright was at the wedding earlier this season, Reverend Keyes' wedding, and they had the girls like staring at Bright, like or lining up to like yes. dance with him, like uh-huh. they're having fun with Bright being this big oafish like guy who's but good with kids.
Yes, yes, I like that. It sucks to like it because I fucking don't want to watch Chris Pratt do anything, but it's very adorable. Bright is becoming
see, that's
very
disgusting.
Nice.
These girls are fucking drooling over this guy. He is okay. grooming every girl in that room.
Okay. All right. So Ephraim and Madison are there at the party too. Madison's like, why does it seem like we haven't talked in forever? I love Bright being like, hey, could you move down a little? You're actually kind of invading my space here.
So weird.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
then... Yes, of course. We got Madison and Ephraim outside on the porch swinging the rain. Jay broke up with me because he felt I didn't care about him the way he cared about me, and he wasn't wrong. He accused me of liking somebody else. No, not the drummer. It's the boy that I babysit. Uh-huh. No, it's a high school kid that I babysit. I think that's, yeah, Eric, you said that, or one of you said it while watching. No, it's just a high school kid that I babysit.
It was you.
She confesses her feelings for him. It's really corny. I wrote down, like, I was way more into this in high school. Aww. But, like, I mean, the line about, like, when he kissed me, in that moment, I just came undone. Are uh-huh. you fucking kidding Ugh. Me?
Yeah.
I came undone.
In the yeah. parking lot of the oh. DMV. Yep.
Exactly. Yep. Uh-huh. What the fuck?
Yep.
With really his romantic. Sister standing right there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Oh my but guys, God. Like, isn't it sort of sad? Like, we're never going to like something like we did when we were teenagers.
What do you mean? Oh, like, because Adam liked Everwood so much?
No, just, like, that's an example. Like, and you were even saying, like, if you were a teenager, you could have seen yourself liking it more.
Babe, I like things. There are things I like a lot. Do you not have feelings? Dude, do you live with me?
Adam gave Bo Burnham's Inside a 2.5 stars.
Adam is a grumpy fuck who doesn't like Bo Burnham.
You're grumpy too.
I'm grumpy too, but look at how excited I got about the snake and how excited I get when I find a feather and when I fucking...
I know.
When I get food that's yummy.
I know.
Or when I play my fucking
D&D game. I don't know what I'm saying,
because
also teenagers hate everything.
Yes, they hate...
What am I talking about, you guys?
Strong emotions.
We're getting so confused.
What is going on?
Who likes what? Who doesn't like things? How old
Everybody
are we?
Everybody likes nothing and nobody likes everything.
Everwood.
Go listen to the Pinecast.
Oh, shout out to the Everwood Pinecast. By the time this comes out, I bet Everwood Pinecast will be done recapping like the show, the whole
yeah,
show.
Yeah, since they do like several episodes.
They're ripping through it.
I'm not sure. Maybe I'll end up releasing multiple episodes of this at a time. Who knows?
No, Adam.
It's okay. Ephraim is in his room, either sick or faking sick.
We went back and forth on that one.
Who knows? But this is the scene, right? Like, where so Madison is like, they're trying to make her be really self-aware uh-huh. that, like, last night was pretty illegal.
It's illegal,
literally.
Yes.
If prison were the only thing I was scared of, I'd be in pretty good shape. I forget what else
was
she said.
Really weird when she said
but
that.
But like she's so it's like all so not other issues that she's concerned about, but and then they kiss again, mm-hmm. and she's like, "That's the problem we keep running into."
Yeah.
I love Adam's Madison voice.
I don't know what I'm doing here. Isn't that the way all great love stories begin? Like, oh, I definitely do not like it. But I also remember liking it. It's wild. It's wild that, like, opinions can change over time, man.
Whoa.
What are you, a flip-flopper?
Get your ass to high school. I never want to say that sentence again. Neither do I, Madison. Neither do I.
So they were in there kissing at like 7:30 in the morning, by the way.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's move to my second least favorite storyline.
But wait a second. I didn't get to complain about...
Yes, you did.
No.
Wait,
in
what?
This specific what? One. This fucking scene where we're joking about whether he's sick or not. In the end, he was supposed to be sick, I guess, because he was home from school.
He said, I'm not that sick.
But okay. But then he said, I'm sick. Kiss me again, basically, was right. His fucking line. I need... I'm a little sick. Could you kiss
because,
me again?
Because he said, it might be a fever dream. Like, yeah. That really happened.
I'm like, really?
It's all gross.
It was, yes. It was the grossest line.
They're just leaning into it.
It's all gross and also good for you, Ephraim. Congratulations.
Oh, no. Yeah.
I kid. Well, Madison kids. Get it?
Does
she
kids?
Fucks kids.
Yeah.
I get it.
Okay. Well, Eric was right about my second to last favorite.
Okay.
Amy and Tommy.
Okay.
We got Amy picking up her antidepressant prescription and the pharmacist being like a mansplaining dick and just talking over her, which is annoying.
Well, that's like what pharmacists are supposed to do.
That is what they're supposed to do. And she is like an eye-rolly queen. She rolls her eyes
she's
at
embarrassed.
Everything. Yeah, but
she doesn't want to. You see her looking around. She doesn't want people to know she's on antidepressants. It's a little embarrassing. She's not like, I get it. I'm smart. Don't tell me. She's like, I don't want to hear.
It's the whole scene. It wasn't just her conversation with a doctor. It was her conversation with a dude at the counter, too. She just rolls her eyes every 3 seconds. I think somebody should time it and chart it out.
Have you ever met a 16-year-old girl?
No.
Me neither.
Have you ever met a depressed 16-year-old girl?
No.
Have you ever met a depressed 16-year-old girl played by Emily Van Camp?
Yes.
I guess so.
She meets a cute guy. He's the cashier. I
made fun of it at first, but by the way, I know that this is my top story, but I totally made fun. I laughed and sniggered at it. When it happened, because it's he's at the counter. Mm-hmm. like he's so pretty, you know, he's a very, very handsome boy.
Yeah.
He's all smoldery and
he's gonna get fired too.
Why? Because he's just like, no,
he's just
fuck
like
you.
Standing
and
in the
goes,
aisle reading
yeah,
a magazine.
Exactly.
Like, you go on break when like someone else is there.
Right. Exactly.
To ring people up.
You don't get to say shitty things to customers and be a punk.
That pharmacist saw all of that. Listen, meth head, you're out of here.
Right. Well, how did they get, if this kid has rumors going around that he did meth, how was he hired at a pharmacy? Real.
Well, it's not like a pharmacy. It's like a CVS or a Rite Aid where the cashiers in the front have nothing to do with the pharmacy itself. But
it's
that's still very funny.
Yes. It's a pharmacy. Especially back then, had they even started putting like the cold medicine behind the freaking pharmacy, you know what I mean? I don't think at that point that was before Breaking Bad, you know what I'm saying? Mm. Wait, was it? When did Breaking Bad come out?
Yes, it was definitely before Breaking Bad.
Was Breaking Bad on VHS? I don't know.
We do hear the meth rumors from Lainey in the scene with Amy and Lainey. We learn that this guy's Tommy Callahan. I guess he's out of rehab. He was on meth. He burned his locker.
I just realized that is
Tommy Callahan.
Chris Farley's character's name on Tommy Boy.
That's
is
funny.
Tommy Callahan
yeah,
and his
Tommy
dad.
Callahan. Oh. Yes, Big Tom Callahan.
I forgot that.
That's my favorite movie from when I was younger. Holy shnikes. That's the first line in the movie. You're welcome.
Holy shnikes.
What's the last line? You don't remember.
Son of a, probably.
So Irv is wrong.
Yeah, as I said.
Amy and Tommy meet at a party. He assumes she's drinking alcohol and says alcohol doesn't mix well with, you know. So he, you know, noticed the antidepressants thing. They want to have a conversation somewhere where there isn't a keg. We see them in a music store. He's judges her for not owning a record player in 2003.
That was very lame, yes.
Like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm. Well, she calls him on it, which I like. Where'd you get one?
Yeah.
My grandma gave it to me.
My grandma died.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It was a whole setup just for him to fucking say that. That's his best pickup line.
My grandma died. Gave me a record player.
He offers some perspective on antidepressants and depression. And, you know, antidepressants aren't a big deal. And people who have a problem with it don't understand depression.
There was a weird cut in there, just filmographically.
Well, this whole thing, they're doing like a weird like montage.
Yeah.
Yes.
And with dialogue. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was
like, I get that they had to do that to depict what they were trying to depict, but it was still kind of awkward.
It felt weird to me.
But apparently the meth rumors are not true. He did pot, he drank a lot.
According to the meth head.
Right. I mean, so I know that you are uninterested in this storyline, Adam. And no, maybe that's because
number three.
No, it's his, yes.
Compared
his
to you, I guess.
Three. That's what I'm saying. I thought it was my favorite one to watch. Because you might know like what happens because you've seen this whole season. Is that true?
Have you seen all of Everwood?
You have seen all. Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe you know that this guy is just a loser and it turns out to be an annoying relationship and it kind of tells me something that you do think it's so lame. I, coming at it from somebody who doesn't know anything about what's about to happen, I was excited to see Amy finally, like, perk up a little bit. Mm. I was excited that it was a kid that might have some issues himself. And so maybe, you know, she went through some trauma. Like, looking at this relationship, to me, it actually seemed pretty cool. He seems very smooth. He seems like if he has rumors being told about him, like, and that he's kind of like, oh, it's a rumor, like, that sucks. Like, that's something he's had to deal with. I think that it was an interesting, mysterious kind of character that I thought, if taken at face value and not assuming that he's lying or manipulative, he seems like an interesting possible character.
Okay.
But now I think he's probably just a douchebag or something.
Don't try to make predictions based on like maybe because I honestly do not remember like what happens.
Yeah.
So but you make really good points. It is cool kind of seeing Amy kind of start emerging from the funk that she's been in.
Yeah.
The funk as somebody who
suffers from clinical stupid
me it was like I suffer from clinical depression and I refer to it as it's a funk
just a little
just
funk.
Snap out of it.
Smile more.
I mean, you know, the episode is doing like it's just like in the movies. They're having everybody they're intentionally writing these heightened lines across all the storylines.
Right.
So yes, it's so hard to see Madison say like I came undone. Like,
yeah.
But they're leaning into this theme that they've decided on for the episode. They only have so much time to write it and shoot it, and so they're just going for it, right?
Yeah.
We have here, you know, Tommy saying, "I heard you were the most beautiful girl at County High, but you don't care about that anymore. Was it you checked your tiara at the door the day your boyfriend died and you've been wandering the halls alone ever since, waiting for someone to come and take the sadness away?" Mm-hmm. Like, and then it starts raining just like in the movies.
Aww, yes. Uh-huh. Spider-Man drops down.
So I don't know. Like, yeah.
But
like,
you know what the thing is? I think, guys, we have just watched a fucking whole season and then a half a season or whatever with this fucking girl upset over this fucking Colin guy. And it has been her entire fucking existence to be centered around this other guy. So, like, I'm fucking ready. I think that it had to be. No. I think it had to be cinematic and overly the top, like perfect, you know, like for her to fall under the spell of somebody else, like not only like starting to be ready to be defined
by a different man.
I understand. Yes, I understand that I was just saying that and I lost that track. But like finally fucking not only leaving the depression or at least starting to climb out of it, but interest in some other person that's different and new, and it's a fucking WB television show, so I'm interested in the new character, okay? So, like, I think that's nice. I think it had to be ridiculously, like, everything is romantic and perfect, and the timing of everything is perfect.
Plus
and
those eyebrows.
Yes. The eyebrows.
This episode brought to you by Paul Wesley's eyebrows. Are you looking to get over your dead boyfriend? Come on down to Paul Wesley's eyebrows. They're hot. And only a year older than you.
Ooh, nice.
35.
And then they kiss. They, I guess, spend all night together and they kiss. I was worried that, like, Harold is gonna like come out and yell at her,
right? Of course.
Like, I was worried there's gonna be a scene where, like, you know, this great night that she has gets ruined by Harold, of course, being worried and scared for his daughter. That will probably end up continuing to be a dynamic in future episodes, but for now, Amy gets to be happy and intrigued by this new person in her life. And yeah, Kitty, you make some good points, and I think I have warmed up a bit to that storyline for sure.
Cool. In that storyline, I found one of the scenes, it struck me that I feel like I could tell they replaced the music. It was the one where it did start to rain. Whatever was in the background there did not feel like it necessarily matched very well.
That's you're probably right. Honestly, like, that is something that I could have been, should have been doing all season, is tracking like what songs got replaced. I don't have as much of a relationship with the music in season two as I do in season one. Yeah, and that
would be so much work. My goodness.
Yeah. I think there's a webpage, like a forum somewhere that has all of it laid out, but people can look it up. Like, yeah, they, for streaming rights, they had to replace songs and the big fat man from that Everwood show.
Oh my God.
And then also we, at least you and I, KT, groaned at the end of all of that when John, what is his name? Johnny? No. What's his name?
Tommy
tipped his imaginary cap.
I got that hat tip, LOL. Yeah. What the fuck?
Here's just my, like, in the movies.
Fedora.
Why didn't he call her m'lady? Right.
Exactly. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
It was like whatever fucking green text bullshit is or whatever. I don't even really know what that is.
Isn't that is the hat tip a Singing in the Rain thing?
Well, they have hats in Singing in the Rain.
Well, nothing comes up immediately in terms of Googling hat tip and Singing in the Rain.
Anyway,
I'm thinking of It's a Wonderful Life when the wife has arranged for a honeymoon dinner in the abandoned house, and the taxi or the cop who's at the door, or either Bert or Ernie, like,
leans
back and water falls or something. Anyway, it's a great little moment in that movie.
That's one of my favorite movies, and I feel like you're one of the only people that might even fucking have been able to remember that, who is even relatively in my age range. No, I knew exactly what you were talking about. I watched that movie growing up all the time, and I used to pretend that I was Clarence. I was obsessed with Clarence.
I loved
the name Clarence. I would ask my dad to play George Bailey with me so I could be Clarence. I loved that movie. I still do. It's my favorite.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. Yeah.
I love it.
Which made it all the harder when immediately after showing it to Jerome at Christmas time, he insisted on showing me Beavis and Butthead Christmas episode spoofing It's a Wonderful Life. Hilarious.
Oh my God.
At the time, I did not think that was hilarious, but now I look back and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
All right. Second favorite storyline. Eric nailed it.
Yes!
We're moving to Justin and Kirsten.
Yes! I knew it.
Wow, like this was more fun than Amy.
I knew that's what Adam would think.
Yeah, Eric, disagree. You know, I might change that actually in light of our conversation. Okay, for sure.
Sure.
But also in a way, when I was kind of planning out the order, it also made sense to kind of transition from the Justin storyline into Andy. The Andy storyline. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
having it interrupted by Amy and Tommy didn't make much sense. So yes, this is the patient of the week, a stuttering patient named Justin. He has been working with Andy on his stutter. Andy says, if you don't think I'm the best speech pathologist for you, I can always recommend someone else. I'm here like, do neurosurgeons typically moonlight as speech pathologists?
I was going to say, you're not a speech pathologist.
Exactly. Because he's gone from doing neurosurgery to being a family practitioner. But yes, there have been a couple moments in this show that I'm like, I feel like
would a family practitioner actually try to handle that?
No.
No,
you would go to a speech therapist or something like that.
That's what specialists are for. Yes.
So, like, is this the fact that he's like, you know, if you don't think I'm the best one, like, it's like
we're all
Andy.
Like, you're probably not.
Yep.
We learn that Justin's best friend Kirsten, who he has feelings for, is leaving, and he wants to be able to mm-hmm. tell her how he feels.
This is a fun fact. When the first scene showed up on Justin, it was like his profile a little bit from behind. Mm-hmm. I was like, is that Adrian Brody?
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, is that why they brought up the pianist in the scene before? I'm like, is it some weird thing?
That's weird.
And it was not Adrian Brody.
Was not Adrian Brody, but that would have been fun, I guess. everyone getting them guest stars.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened already, so it wasn't out of the question.
We see Andy and Justin practicing. Justin was supposed to memorize what he wanted to say to Kirsten. There's some fun pauses in the scene where Andy is just waiting for Justin to keep going. I would say overall, Andy displays remarkably little patience for much the same way as Linda when she's showing Amy how to meditate.
Yep.
Just immediately is like, you know what? This isn't working.
Yeah.
That's when the show turns into a sitcom in those kinds of moments.
That's also why Andy and Linda are good for each other, is because they have the same kind of foibles of like, you know,
they're doctors.
We're brilliant.
Patience. Ow! God, that hurts.
And now, in addition to being a speech pathologist, Andy is also a love doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also, this is baffling to me. Like, it seems so obvious, right? They decide that, like, the creators of the show, the writers, the director, you know, decide that when Justin is talking from the heart about Kirsten, he doesn't stutter as much.
Mm-hmm.
So I was expecting, at the end of that scene, Andy to be like, you know what?
Yeah.
Didn't you notice?
Yes.
It didn't stutter.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't. So so Andy doesn't even point that out as encouragement. It's so weird. Or maybe they were trying to avoid the cliche of, but one, I don't know whether that cliche of you didn't stutter as much when you were speaking from the heart, I don't know if that existed.
It totally does.
Early 2000s.
Oh, I don't know.
And two, this is exactly the episode where they should have felt comfortable leaning into that cliche.
Yes.
They're doing it just like in the movies. So it's very strange to me that I do see economically what, like in terms of the screenplay of the episode, why they couldn't end that episode on a like up note.
Yeah.
Of like, hey, that's good, right? They couldn't do that because they needed Andy to be at the slumber party and for Brittany to say, you look sad, you should sing. And so that Andy could get the idea of singing instead. So it's just like, it's just a little confusing moment that, they had to kind of do that to get to the next part of the storyline. But, you know, just kind of weird. Like, if you were really a good speech pathologist / love doctor,
or an actual
you would
speech pathologist.
Say, I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like specialists, like honestly, this is the funny thing to me. I've been to so many specialists in the past year because of my issues. Specialists really specialize in that they are not good general practitioners. And that's why every time I think about this neurologist being a general practitioner, especially seeing how much he's catering to every individual case and like trying to, you know what I mean? Like the stuff with the one guy who has that, the degenerative blind
his friend
thing. Yes. Like, that guy should be going, well, I don't know, maybe that would be neurology, but seriously, there's like so many very specific things that we have seen that I've been like, I really feel like he's an inappropriate doctor for this situation.
But I think at least with that, at least with that storyline, like they referenced, like Andy was like, you're going going to get like tests in Denver. Like there was a team of people involved, you know?
Okay.
Like this is just like, they just decided like, all right, I'll help you with this. Like, right. I'm Andy Brown. I'm brilliant.
Yeah, it's weird.
Look at my smile.
Yeah.
So yes, Andy takes Justin to the warehouse where Kirsten works with the idea that, you know, yes, people with speech difficulties tend not to stutter when they're singing. Justin sings to Kirsten the song from the end of An Officer and a Gentleman, not 9 to 5, like I said at the beginning. This is a very funny moment where Andy's like looking to the warehouse worker next to him. He's like, sounds great, huh? My idea.
God. Yeah.
But that warehouse worker is like unimpressed and just confused. Like, what? And confused. Like, what the fuck? Very funny.
That actor did an amazing job.
Yes.
Yeah. Like his face was completely like.
Yeah. It's like, why did everybody stop working?
Good thing the other warehouse workers were not as unimpressed as he was. They, in fact, applauded, just like the warehouse workers at the end of An Officer and a Gentleman. Kind of sweet. But she has cut him off in singing. She takes the microphone from him and tells him she does not feel the same way about him.
Nope.
Which is pretty sad.
Oh, my God. Like, why wasn't he already aware when she took the microphone? He should have just known. He kept his hopes up.
He thought she was going to keep singing.
He was like, I know that my voice isn't great, but I love it. And I'm like, dude, that's not why she's taking the microphone. Stop.
She's like, he's so clueless. I've already put a down payment and a 2 months rent on my lease in Texas, and I've accepted my new job, but right. I'll stay.
I looked at the IMDb page for the episode. I wanted to see if that warehouse worker was credited. He wasn't.
Aww.
That means he's like an extra who they just kind of pulled aside. It was like, we need you to do this part.
Uh-huh. Make that face you're making right now. Go.
Do they ever cast, like, I was just trying to think of this, the actor. Is it possible that the actor has a stutter?
Oh.
Well,
I'm guessing it's probably not the case.
The actor's name is Eyal Podell.
I feel like that would be.
It's so not like you were about to make some sort of dumb pun joke. Eyal.
Eyal Podell was born in Israel. I'm going to Google his name plus stutter. There aren't great matches for your search.
I know.
Google thinks it should be A.L. Podell Twitter. Did you mean Twitter? So, yeah, I don't think. Yeah, I mean, that would have been very impressive of Everwood in the early 2000s to like go out of their way to cast an actor with an actual stutter.
Right.
We'll talk about this when we talk about Andy's storyline. But at the end of this scene was one of the several great faces of Treat Williams in this episode. It just like the look in his face of just like sadness and like frustration and disappointment at the fact that this plan didn't work was really, really solid. And the last scene with Justin is kind of nice. Andy comes in saying, not a good morning. Phones are no good. Disconnect all our phones. I guess that's because of something that's happening with Linda.
Linda related. Yes. Yeah. Yes. He's hoping she'll call him.
Mm-hmm.
So disconnect all our phones. Justin is in his office. He says that all I ever wanted was to know that I tried everything.
But that also, that moment, that Treat Williams moment, I feel like was so representational of like his character in this episode was so flamboyant, like dramatic with his gestures. Even that was like, disconnect the phones. None of them. It was like, it was so dramatic. Every it's kind of fitting.
It's funny. It's like fitting that like if he's bitten by the love bug, for Linda, like, you know, people get that way.
Yeah. So it's so funny though. Like it's so fitting for this character, I think.
And everybody's starts acting like larger than life, like movie characters, versions of themselves. Justin's like, not the first, you know, Kirsten's not the first girl I ever liked, but she's the first girl I ever told. I'm just telling her felt pretty damn good. So yeah, that's nice.
And he's like, but she said no.
Yeah.
but.
And of course, that's where Andy gets the idea for how to resolve his storyline. Andy and Linda, I think this was the one that I rolled my eyes at the least. I really enjoyed the storyline. We see...
I don't know.
You might have rolled your eyes.
Oh sure.
This Adam didn't.
Yeah.
For me.
Okay.
We see Edna backtracking on having pushed for Linda and Andy to get together. Because the last time we saw Edna, she was sobbing in the her stairwell about the fact that her daughter has HIV. But this is a funny moment where she's like, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I don't even know what's coming out of my mouth. I drink a lot.
Yeah.
Right. In an episode that, in a show that like already acknowledges the seriousness of alcoholism because Colin's father is an alcoholic.
Right.
They're also willing to just have Edna say, I drink a lot.
Oh, me too, Edna.
That's the scene where Andy's like going to be persistent with Linda. And he says to Edna, women like men of action.
Don't they?
Yes. There's a nice little pause there. Yes. But yeah, again, in this his smile at the end of this scene.
Oh, that's my gifable moment. Yep. That smile. That's my gifable moment of this.
Right. Will you write that down for me?
I wrote it down on this paper.
And now you're saying it and expecting me to remember it?
I don't know.
Just save that piece of paper.
I have. It has all my gifable moments on it.
Oh, okay. Good. But KT, you and I both like were immediately like, that's Quoth. That's the Quoth factor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I hate about Name of the Wind is all the constant fucking warm smiles.
Yep.
Fucking gross. Warm, cloying smiles. Mm-hmm. But on Treat Williams, I have to love it.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, because,
he was should have actually... him play Quoth.
He would be a good Quoth.
Yeah.
But isn't Quoth supposed to be
young?
I forget how old he's supposed to be, but I think he's pretty young.
Well, Treat could play young. It's fine.
Treat could have played Quoth in 2003, but not now in Chesapeake Shores era.
Oh, come on. Lin-Manuel Miranda could make it work for the TV show.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
So Harold is walking into the doctor's Abbott office. There are a bunch of flowers there that Andy sent to Linda.
Uh-huh.
He calls it arrogant and puerile.
Puerile.
Thinks he can buy your affection with 100 roses. Actually, it's 300. 300?
This must have cost a fortune.
This man is persistent as a wart virus. It's kind of sweet, actually, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Harold and Linda in this episode, even before their great kind of scene later, and, you know, even when Harold is like anti-Andy, it's sweet because he's like, it's you and me versus him, Linda. Like, I've got your back.
Right. Yeah. She's told him he's not interested and he's being like a defensive big brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's like, all right, well, like, we will eat lunch inside for 2 weeks if we have to. I'll go get lunch. We got this together. It's very sweet. But clearly, Linda, you know, does have feelings for Andy. She just is hesitant to start anything with him because of the HIV, which, you know, it's understandable. Sure. But Andy's going to be persistent anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think we're supposed to feel that way about men being persistent in pursuing women.
Oh, yeah. Come on. How many times did Ephraim have to kiss Madison before?
Oh, God.
All right. That's where he gets it. And yet he persisted. Let's take that back. Let's take back persistence, Eric. Ew. Let's reclaim it.
Yeah. Ew. Not all persistence.
No.
Oh, my God.
Not all persistence is good. Some of it's bad because we do it. Yeah.
That's amazing.
The next time we see Dr. Abbott, a red balloon is just floating through his office.
It's like, supposed to be a reference to it.
I think it's a visual reference to it, which is amazing. And Dr. Abbott's like, we need to be proactive about this. We can't just wait it out anymore. Tell him why you don't like him. She's struggling. She's like, well, I'm not a fan of facial hair.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wouldn't make sense in the long run. We're not a good fit. And he's like, well, tell him. Let him down. Let him down hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love, by the way, that he's sending these to the workplace. It's not to her home.
I know. I know.
And this got to be like on some 10% level,
of it. Yep. To fuck
is,
with.
Is for Harold.
Harold, yep.
I didn't think about that.
I love the idea that Andy and Harold is the true love story of the course of this show.
Yep, absolutely. Oh my goodness.
Linda confronts Andy. I'm not interested in you. And this breaks Andy's heart. And it broke mine too. At the end, he's legitimately like frowning. And it's funny, but it's also like really sad.
I said he has a great letdown / crushed face. OMG,
and he's
my
frozen.
Heart. Yes. Like the whole time I was like, remember, I was like clutching my heart. Like, ow.
Treat showed up in this episode. I think it's so good.
Yeah.
We see Rose for a scene, which is always nice. I want to see more of her.
Mm-hmm.
Harold brings home the balloons and flowers.
Fucking Harold.
It's so good. What's this for? Amazing. Just for being you. A simple gesture. That's all. And of course,
I love that she doesn't give it away.
You would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for those damn Lindas. Rose, I assume Linda didn't mind you stealing all of her gifts. Well, sometimes simple gestures are born out of convenience, Rose. That doesn't make them any less thoughtful.
Oh my god.
But this is the scene where, you know, it takes, you know, a wife like Rose to kind of shake Harold and say, are you an idiot?
Yeah.
Like, obviously she's attracted to him.
Uh-huh.
Something else is going on. Who wouldn't be attracted to Trey Williams?
Rose is.
Look at that smile he gave at one
Look
time.
Look at how high his pants are.
Have you seen, like, there should have been a whole monologue by Rose. Like, have you seen his smiles? They are so big and positively charming. I saw him stop outside Mama Joy's and just turn back and smile in at everybody in the diner. Later on, I saw him pause before getting into his car and look out at the town and smile real big.
Oh, Harold.
Oh, Harold. Gosh. Sometimes you are just so clueless.
I don't know, Rose. I think smiles are overrated.
Well, why don't you try to do a smile right now? Do an Andy smile. Do a Dr. Brown smile. Come on, do it.
Rose.
Do it just once.
Rose.
If you love me and you love this marriage, you will give me one Andy Brown smile.
Well, I don't know why you had to call it an Andy Brown smile, but fine.
All right. We have to start an Everwood role-playing game or like an Everwood.
I want to! Oh, my God! I so want to!
Big Everwood orcs!
Oh, my God! Holy shit!
That's amazing. Oh, fuck. Harold,
now I'm never gonna let this idea go. I'm gonna talk about a RPG of Everwood for the rest of my life. All right.
We have to do it. We should the same thing we did with the Burbs, like 20 years later in Everwood.
Yeah.
We play the characters. Oh my god. Even just play acting that little scene between Rose and, Harold was like so fun.
Really fun, honestly, yes.
So like this would involve us. I mean, I don't know if it's quite a role-playing game or if like we write a spec script and then do a reading of it. Like,
OMG.
And we
Oh god.
All right,
I'm
well,
into
we'll
it.
stick a pin in this. We'll come back to it. We do have this great, great Harold and Linda scene. Uh-huh. So, of course, we see... So, Harold has, you know, learned the truth. You must think I'm quite the fool. Very dramatic of him.
Right.
Sorry, yeah, I wasn't expecting you to call Beijing.
Yeah.
And track down a clinic and a particular intern named Jana, who says to say hello. Yeah, but she tells Harold the truth. I went to China for a case. That case was mine. Trying to look for alternate treatments for the HIV. Mm-hmm. And that's where she learned about all of the
Eastern medicine.
The Eastern medicine that she's been into. And yeah, this final little monologue of Harold's is, again, just one of his best in the show. What about Andrew Brown? If this is the only reason you're not seeing him, you have to tell him. He's a grown man. Let him decide for himself what he can and cannot handle. Mm-hmm. You deserve some happiness in your life. And so does he. Harold. Oh my God. Harold.
Yes.
And Harold. And it was delivered perfectly because it was slightly begrudging. It wasn't just sappy.
But it was kind.
But it was genuine.
You're right. Like in terms, slightly begrudging. It's slightly begrudging.
Yeah, exactly.
Only because he paused. Only because he paused. Otherwise, it was completely.
He was sincere and genuine, but just slightly. Still, it wasn't just not himself.
You've got to get the little dig in, but it was perfect. That was beautiful. Yeah. Love it.
Absolutely. Tom Amandus.
I love
the title of the title of the next episode of Everwood Never Wouldn't to release is Tom Amandus Loves Pokemon.
For real? I have no idea what the fuck.
You'll have to listen to it.
I definitely
will.
See
Mark Jessen's wiki entry for it.
And finally, yes, Andy gets, you know, decides to do the singing idea himself.
Yeah.
We get to hear, I think this is the first time hearing Treat sing in the show.
Must be.
Yes.
Despite the fact that he ended up not being in The King and I. Because he couldn't memorize the lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, Treat Williams he's musical acting experience. He was in Hair. And so I'm surprised that they waited this long to kind of get his singing into the show. But, you know, I think he has a very nice voice.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
And he's playing guitar outside Linda's house and singing.
But are his teeth too white, you guys?
Okay. We're not going to talk about Treat Williams.
Please.
No, they're not.
They literally look like dentures. I don't mean this to be in the podcast, but guys, like, honestly.
But
I'm not taking this out, KT.
He's not
going
to
edit it
out.
This is going in, so you have to stop.
They are too white
and
perfect.
Have you met an actor, a professional actor?
Then they're large.
That's his moneymaker. Have you seen his smiles?
That's what Rose is talking about. There's a whole scene here where Harold is like, yeah, but his teeth are too white. Too big and white, Rose. And that's for Everwood, the whitest town in America. Andy's line is, you know, I had to make sure that I tried absolutely everything. Tip of the hat to Justin. And we get the story, Linda's story of how she got HIV, which I found very affecting.
Yeah.
Very intense and sad.
Yes.
And I think it says a lot about her that, you know, and that she contracted it in this deeply humane moment of just not wanting this 3-year-old disease-stricken, abandoned boy to die alone. And she's offering this boy, like this child, comfort and companionship in his final moments. Mm-hmm. And that's how she got HIV.
Yep.
I imagine, you know, there must be plenty of like that's how it happens for a lot of people doing that kind of work. And I wouldn't be surprised if the writers were inspired by a real story like that or multiple. I don't know, but really, really affecting. And the episode ends on that note. Very curious, I think I felt the same way back then as I do now, which is feeling this tug at the end of like, Andy,
yeah,
you need to comfort her.
Yeah.
Like, hug her, show that like, it's okay, I'm here. But I also suspect that that's like, that refraining from doing that was a really strong choice by the writers and by the creators of the show. I don't know why. I think that maybe that would that have cheapened it? Would it have taken away from the difficulty of it by immediately having some comfort there?
I think so.
I mean, sorry if this this might ruin everything, but like,
are her teeth too white?
Her teeth are too white. Yes, that's it. No, it seemed to me like kind of a cliffhanger-y choice. Like, it just, they were trying to do it like, it could, I mean, the news is big news, right? And like, back then, I think in high school was when I was taught things like HIV, like you can't get it from, or like AIDS, you can't get it from touching from someone.
Toilet
you can't,
seat or whatever.
Right, like they were still doing a lot of education back then.
On VHS.
So on VHS. I just, like, when I watched it, it felt very like, well, what will he do?
Yeah, I see that. I don't get the same read. I don't think it was intended to be a cliffhanger per se.
Yeah.
I think that maybe it was just intended to like let the difficulty and the seriousness of this issue, both as a public health issue and as this a thing in this character's life, let it sit there. Like, let it be its own thing without being overshadowed by, okay, now it's about the Andy's relationship with her again. Like, we have to just let it sit. It has to be like, that's a heavy enough thing. You know, I don't know, there's still a lot of HIV stigma today.
Yeah.
I think a bit less. I think it's on the trajectory.
Yes.
Has been good.
Yeah.
But I think definitely at that point in the early 2000s, like, there wasn't, like, I think it was still pretty bad.
Yes.
So, I don't know how that played into, I wish that there were commentaries for these episodes. I don't think they did any commentaries past season one, but I would have really liked to hear the writer's kind of thoughts and experiences with this episode. I wonder if there are any interviews like or articles online. Everwood, I mean, it's more like an arc, right? Like, it's not even like the AIDS episode.
No, it's
right.
Not.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a through line.
It's the whole, like, her dealing with a fear of telling people, a fear of being looked at like she's sick or anything. I don't know. Sympathy. I don't know. Lots of stuff. It's been really interesting. Like,
Yeah. So not immediately apparent that there's any kind of like we had with the abortion episode. Like, there were like oral histories of that episode or of like abortion on TV and how everyone kind of slotted into that.
Sure.
So anyway, let's do ratings first.
Okay.
In anticipation, during, and in hindsight. Who wants to go first?
In anticipation, 4 stars, because I couldn't remember what the title was, so I couldn't think back on that. But I'm glad that I nailed my prediction. during, 4 stars, very much enjoyed watching this episode. I don't have the problems with as much of a problem with Ephraim and Madison that you guys do.
Ugh.
But yeah, I thought it was solid overall. I was not like some of the episodes you're like, okay, let's get through this storyline and back to the others. I did not have that with this episode.
Yep.
And in retrospect, 2.5 stars.
Okay, no explanation needed. Nope. KT?
All right, in anticipation, 5, because, yeah, I also could not remember even what we had guessed or anything, but we had, it's been a while, right? We didn't do it last week, so.
A couple of weeks.
Oh, really? Yeah. Gosh, geez. So, yeah, like, I was like, when's Everwood gonna happen? And then while Everwood was happening, it was also good. Gosh, you're right. Like, I think the fact that at no point did I go, well, no. Okay, listen. Ephraim and Madison are disgusting. And I was uncomfortable, like, watching it. But
it's also kind of hot.
But that's what you're going to say? Like, no, but it wasn't like... It's like, I'm going to just have to accept that it happened 20 years ago and I'll just have to get over it and just kind of assume that he's 18 or something. This is so weird. But like, forgiving that stuff, like, it's not terrible. Whatever. Ephraim's a goober. I don't know why you like him so much. Whatever. But he's Ephraim and I know who he is because we do this Everwood podcast. So I'm going to say... 5 stars, I guess, during and 5 stars after. I'm just going to go 5 stars.
Wow.
That's wild.
It's,
okay.
It's hard because you know my favorite of all time is the McGillicuddy. The McGilla stuff. And I know there have been some really good episodes, but I really enjoyed watching it. So what can I say? 5 stars.
Awesome. Okay. In anticipation, I'll say 5. For same reason, like it had been a while and I was excited to get back into watching Everwood with my two best friends. during I'll say 4, because during while watching it I was definitely like every time the teenagers were on the screen I like my eyes rolled into the back of my head. Like I was just like I don't know if part of it is like I'm watching with you guys and I am more self-conscious about it. I don't know. Like,
I would feel the same way though. I would understand because, like, you probably feel like we frame this as Adam's making us watch Everwood, but like that's not actually happening.
No,
like,
I know.
If it really sucked and we all didn't want to do it, then we would just figure out a way to watch something else, and we probably will do that anyway. Yeah. I'm hoping.
Yeah, we've already been brainstorming other shows to watch.
Yeah,
with you.
Yeah, so like you know, this is fun. Yeah, don't ever feel guilty or weird.
No,
about
like,
it.
Yeah, it just.
Well, try stop to making throw those it out fucking faces, KT.
Oh, sorry.
When we're watching.
But I'm over here making faces too. Like, just like, oh my God.
And I'm just smiling like treat.
Gosh, your teeth got really white just then.
Too white.
I love how before we started this podcast, I legit, like, wanted there to be, like, a fictional through line where, like, Eric. Somehow mutated into Andy Brown gradually over the course of the podcast.
And it's happening.
And it is kind of happening, yeah. But the podcast can't see it because it's just this monologue.
Yeah.
So a 4 while watching, I struggled with some of the corniness of the lines. In retrospect, I think a 5. Largely because, you know, like Eric, you said, like, you don't have as much of a problem with Everman and Madison as me and KT. Like, I feel like I don't have as much of a problem with it as I do. Like,
yeah. Yes, I feel exactly right.
I feel torn about it. I feel like, you know, I do think that, like, it does feel gross 20 years later because there is just, you know, I think in general, we have learned as a society to take that shit more seriously.
Right.
Like, this was not long after, you know, R. Kelly's shit where he was just publicly like, marrying like a 15-year-old girl, like it was so obvious, but everybody was like, "What? Yeah. It seems so fine."
Yeah.
So you know, I think that you know, despite my kind of throughout the course of this episode waffling about like, well, you know, it's case by case, Kevin Spacey. Despite that, like, the important thing is like taking that shit seriously,
right.
And you know. And not having double standards about it based on gender, and that, you know, a 20-year-old woman should not be getting involved with a 16-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And, you know, so is it gross and embarrassing and, you know, that Everwood, much like a lot of our society at the time, was willing to do this? like, do we watch this as like a symptom of a culture that that wasn't really caring about abuse and was like kind of reifying and like reinforcing and maintaining shit like that? Maybe. But still, 5 stars. the real reason for the 5 stars is because I think Harold's monologue to Linda and then Linda's monologue to Andy are both enough to make the episode really a standout episode for me. So good stuff. Let's move to TV time. Are you going to the Democratic Republic of Congo to help civilians displaced and out of reach of aid workers?
Oh, this is sad.
Parsley, sage, rosemary, TV time.
Really sad.
4 years ago, TV time user Paula Clapboard emoji. Is that what the movie Slate? The Slate.
Yeah. Okay. Paula Slate.
Paula Slate Slate's emoji.
Sister.
Wrote, loved this episode. Heart emoji, but the heart has like a little red circle underneath. Is it supposed to be like a red, like a drop of blood dripping from the bottom of the heart?
I never have understood that one. Yeah. It's probably that though. Yeah.
Loved this episode. I'll give you a heart for that, Paula. A regular heart, not a dripping heart. TV time user of the Fandom Lounge 2 years ago wrote, I love Tommy and Amy, purple heart emoji. And 7 months ago, TV time user Marillo Lopez Sobrino wrote, where's the neighbor?
What? Wait.
Nina.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I
just love that. Like, very straightforward. Like, where's the neighbor?
Right. Yep. Well, honestly, I agree wholeheartedly because from the fucking beginning, I wanted them to get together. Now fucking Dr. Abbott's sister comes in, Dr. Abbott 2, and she's all...
Nina was mentioned in this episode.
I forget. Not by name. When was she?
Oh, no, but Nina by name,
will just
actually
stand by and take care of Dr. Abbott's or Dr.
Scene,
Brown's children for him
it
for
was
free,
the scene
I guess.
Where Delia and Brittany, is that her name, were planning their slumber party.
Yeah.
And Andy Brown was there and he said, I have to go to work early. Nina's going to drive you.
What the fuck? Poor Nina.
So Nina was in this episode.
Poor Nina. Justice for Nina.
Justice for Nina. Time for. Treat. Wait, no, I have to do my outro of the TV time. This has been Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, TV time.
Tweet, 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 tweet.
No, no, no.
Oh, no.
You're getting all fucked up. Now it's time for Treat Tweets.
Tweet.
What? What? Roll with it. This is the control room. Roll with it.
With Treat's tweets, he is very excited about the release of Chesapeake Shores, which he's working on.
Yeah.
We should be saying, I guess, like when, like what
no,
range
they have to,
of time
they have
is.
To figure it out.
Okay.
This is what tells them when it is.
It's part of the puzzle.
Scroll
okay.
Back,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's very excited about the release of Chesapeake Shores. He's very proud of the work that they're doing.
Mm.
He is also very proud of his home state of Vermont, or at least where he lives primarily, because of their vaccination statistics.
Amazing.
That's mostly it. He retweets a lot of fun, great things. He RIPs when certain people die, like Ned Beatty, for example. He's just your typical 70-something-year-old dude using Twitter.
Yep.
That's great.
While filming a TV show.
Thank you for your report on that, Eric.
You're welcome.
This has been Treat Tweets.
Oh, tweet. Did that work? Was that good?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
That was awesome. Now let's do predictions.
Okay, this is my favorite.
This might be kind of underwhelming.
Next
week's episode is titled Unhappy Holidays.
Oh. Cool.
What could it possibly be about? No, the November 24th, 2003 episode titled Unhappy Holidays.
Eric wouldn't have known if you you were so confused by
Fuck
that.
Thanksgiving. I never know when Thanksgiving is.
I know when it is. It's the fourth Thursday in November. But what? I was just, you guys were like, oh my gosh, it's the late November episode. And I'm like, what? Oh, like, is that... It's Thanksgiving, that means it's going to be like a big deal.
Well, because the Thanksgiving episode in season one was great. It's when Harold had the cancer scare, and he invited everybody over. I love holiday episodes. That's why I love the Halloween and the Christmas episodes of Community.
Yeah,
Yeah, I do too.
And I will watch those on those holidays. Mm-hmm.
But I noticed you didn't mention the Thanksgiving episodes of Community.
That is pretty biting of you. Mm-hmm. And I will say that is one thing I actually really like about Everwood, is that they made it a point to do Thanksgiving episodes.
Okay.
So, fuck you. This has been Everwood? Never Wouldn't. You know what's wild? The episodes that I've been editing are an hour long. And I'm waiting for they eventually get to be
pretty
an hour
long.
And a half.
Long.
Yep, we're at 143.
It's probably when I start insisting on I'm taking notes on every scene. We're going through every single scene.